hearing people receive laughter, or hearing people say, I needed that, or I just, oh, I needed a good laugh, or oh, because life's tough, you know? And so even if it's just for one moment in time and one little night, they get to step away from everything and laugh for a little bit. It's like, that to me is such a gift to get to do that.
Welcome to the Creative Chats Podcast with Mike Brennan. Welcome, friends, to another episode of Creative Chats. This is the podcast for artists, makers, and content creators, where we talk about creativity, the creative process, and story. Now, today, I bring to you another golden episode. I know, I'm biased. I love them all. And I enjoy these conversations I have with my guests, and I hope you do too. And I don't take it lightly that you have taken some time out to tune in today. And so today, I have a special guest, JJ Barrows. Now, JJ is such a creative powerhouse. She is an artist, an author, and a stand-up comedian. I mean, that is just awesome. I've watched many of her videos and just laughed so hard. She's got just great comedic timing and insights. And I love how she just weaves her story in and out of all these things. And someone who has that ability to have multiple creative expressions and be able to, again, just create things that are true to herself and connect with her audience. We talk about things like, what is it like to be in a place where you are creating comedy on stage? And what does it look like to create visual art? And what does it look like to write a book? I mean, these are all things that she's done and done so well. And I really encourage you, check out her YouTube videos. She is just, again, I think you'll really, really enjoy her. And I just want to get out of the way here because we get into so many great things here, including the importance of being self-aware and the role that that plays in our lives as creative people. Just knowing who you are, knowing where you've come from, knowing how to access all the experiences and skills and things that you've been through in your life to harness those to create new things. And there are places where those things overlap as well. And so without further ado, here is my creative chat with JJ Barrows. JJ, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
No, you are awesome.
I received that.
Yes. I have to tell you, you are fast becoming my favorite JJ. You have surpassed JJ Walker. Dynamite! For anybody who is not familiar with the 70s TV show Good Times.
Google that.
Youngins. And, you know, surpassing JJ Abrams. So,
Oh yeah, huge. That's a big compliment. Thank you.
You're in a good JJ club, so that's good.
JJ club. I like that. That's a good place to be. I'll be there.
Yes. So, man, I have just started poking around and, you know, looking at your videos and following your journey a little bit, and I'm excited for this episode for people to hear just about your journey, your story a little bit, your creative process. So before we get into any of that kind of stuff, can you just give us like kind of the bird's eye view, quick synopsis, who is JJ and what do you do?
Who is JJ? Great question. I'm still trying to figure that out.
Yes.
Lifelong journey of who am I? Well, I guess creatively speaking, I'm an artist, a visual artist, painting. I love painting. That's probably one of my first and earliest loves is visual art, as well as a writer. I love writing. That's a later in life discovery. Well, maybe not. I've journaled my whole life, so maybe that counts. But so artist, writer, and oddly enough, a stand-up comedian, which is its own form of art because it's storytelling and it's figuring out how to do it in a way that is humorous enough to keep people laughing, which is a whole art in and of itself, because I love storytelling, but when I got into comedy, that was like, whoa, this is like a completely different battle, so to speak, because there's a different pressure that comes with telling a story that has to make people laugh versus, you know, just telling a story for the sake of information, or even art, you know, presenting art in a way that art, it's like, oh, that's just not their style, or those aren't their colors. You know, with stand-up comedy, it's like, no, it's you. Like, I just don't want to. Yeah. So I would say,
get off the stage. Yeah, right?
Who I am is I've discovered these, I am these things and I'm not at the same time, you know, like these things are very much a part of my life, and I doing them is what makes me feel alive. At the same time, if I cling to or get attached to any sort of result or outcome that I expect of them, then I become completely insecure and hopeless and whatever, because we live in a world of totally unique and creative people, and there's so much content out there that if I rely on, you know, what I do to give me a sense of like fulfillment or worth because of the opinions or views or how many likes, you know, of other people, then I'm kind of lost. So I'm this mix of I'm made of these things, and at the same time I'm not, because I have to be, you know, made of more, because I have to be okay, you know, whether or not they give me what I'm hoping for as far as affirmation.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. I love that. It sounds like you're just very self-aware in that regard. And that's a gift, you know?
Yes, lots of therapy.
Yeah, I think everybody should really be in therapy in some form or another.
Just not so much, people kind of have a, not that I want to make it all about that, but like you said, self-awareness. Mm-hmm. So just using it as a tool, whether it is a therapist or whether it's a friend or, you know, but somebody that you can kind of sort through all this stuff that's in here. And because I think we all have it, you know, we all have the stuff, I guess, for lack of a better term, and it needs to get out somehow. I think that's why artists are really great at, that's essentially what they're doing. They have all this stuff and they have figured out a way to creatively express it, you know? Yeah. And so that's why they say, you know, some comedians are some of the most troubled or depressed people. Some artists have the most baggage, but they're still, they can be very healthy. They've just found a medium to sort of express, you know, what's going on in here. For me, therapy was like the icing on the cake. It was like, let me talk it out as well, because I'm verbally expressive person. But yeah, I would say self-awareness for me was huge, because I think before it was just sort of letting any emotion out that, mm-hmm. you know, that came, and thinking that, you know, how I felt was ultimate truth, and that's not true. And so, yeah, I feel like my art and my art in all forms, whether writing or whether painting or comedy, while I might have done it before maybe becoming self-aware, I think becoming self-aware helped me filter it and articulate it in a way that made it maybe more receivable from other people, as opposed to like, I'm just crazy and this is how I feel.
Yes. Yeah. Like that, you know, oh, we're on the highway and look at that. There's a car wreck on the side of the road. We are slowing down to watch. It's, you don't want to be that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You want people to watch along with you, not necessarily watch and stare at your dish.
Yes.
You
know? That's awesome.
Yeah.
So let's go back to your childhood if we can. Do you have an experience centered around creativity that's vivid to you, that just looking back was a time that signified to you like, hey, I'm a creative person?
Yeah. It's so funny because I yes, but I don't think, and maybe a lot of people could say this is true for them in that moment. I don't necessarily know if I knew cognitively that's what was happening.
Right.
But it's what flashes back every time someone asks, how, you know, when do you remember your first creative moment, or what was a da 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 da? But it's so silly. I remember I used to kind of get in trouble a lot for like drawing on. I would never just draw on paper. I would always go off on the table or on the wall or the chair. And it's so funny because it's so easy to look at a kid that's doing that and being like, you're misbehaving. Right. It's easy to reprimand the behavior as opposed to see like, okay, I don't know if they're meaning to behave badly so much as they haven't learned to filter yet. Right. The self-awareness thing, they haven't learned to filter yet or articulate what's going on, you know, inside of them. And so My mom's also pretty self-aware. I did get in trouble a lot for drawing all over things, but maybe not as much as I could have. I don't know. But I very vividly remember we had this big wooden coffee table, just huge coffee table in our living room. And I remember learning enough to know that if I colored on top of it or drew on top of it, I would get in trouble. That was bad. So I would go and lie underneath it and I would color all underneath this coffee table. And I would take gum and that's kind of like the 3D.
Yeah. You know?
And I called it my galaxy. So I just had this galaxy under the coffee table, just of vivid, vivid colors and gum. So it was like texture. I didn't know that I was kind of doing this like 3D art, maybe sort of thing at the time. But to me, it was just like my hidden. And here I was, it was like more creative to me than like paper, but at the same time I wasn't getting in trouble because nobody could see it. And I think for the longest time, no one even really knew it was under there until one of my siblings like went under to get something and was like, what the heck is this? But it's this very vivid memory of like, I have created something. This is my special creation. And for whatever reason that my little galaxy, it made me so happy and wanting even later in life when I got more into like abstract painting, that memory was what I would go back to as far as like, I don't have to paint something that looks, you know, perfectly like XYZ. This simple meshment of colors just makes me so happy. And so there's something about recreating that innocence in a different way. As an adult, and I think, you know, again, the self-awareness thing, but learning how to take that, you know, that childhood experience of like, color wherever the heck I want to, you know, that's where the self-awareness comes in, right? Because you can't just treat people's stuff as like, I don't care, it doesn't matter, or well, this is just in me, I need to let it out. Like, there's truth to that. Yeah, you need to let it out. But then again, that goes with the learning how to filter thing. What does it look like to care about people and also express yourself, you know, and let it out. And so I think, you know, I think children, that's such a fine line. I don't have kids, so I don't really know, but my guess is, and my experience as a kid is it's so easy to quickly look at behavior and deem it, you know, good or bad and then react accordingly. Versus sometimes what would it look like to look at it curiously, like, oh, what is this actually telling me about who they are and what they need and what they like or what they're doing? I remember, I think I was like late 20s, I had a friend take me to a hip hop dance class. First time I'd ever gone. And it was the most fun, like self-expressive thing, I think, and you're moving your body. Like it was so eye-opening to me. I cried kind of like in the middle, like not like bald, but just like I was getting tears. My friend was like, what is wrong with you? And I was like, I feel like if my mom would have put me in dance class as a kid, I would have not had to have so much therapy. Like it just, it's kind of a funny example of like paying attention to what's going on, you know, like when they're younger, because there might be these outlets, these creative outlets that actually help kids get what's in there out. Sometimes it's not always such a behavioral thing. So that was probably maybe a loaded answer than you were looking for. But I remember kind of just these episodes as kids where I had to let that color, that art out very expressively. And I didn't know why, like, and sometimes still I have to color or doodle kind of just all over things, all over objects. And it's funny because that is part of the art that I've done later in life. I mean, I've done everything from painting a piano to a wedding dress while it was on the person to a horse to, so it's translated across way more than just paper for whatever reason. But I very vividly, I called it my little galaxy. It was kind of where it all started for me under the coffee table.
Is that coffee table still around?
No, I wish it was. That'd be so amazing.
That would be. You'd be like, hey, I'm going to charge admission. You can come in, see some of my earlier work.
Oh, that would be so. Yeah, that's the other thing I would say to people. Like, save everything. Like, as far as, like, stuff that kids create, writings. I was saying earlier, I've journaled for however long. I've kept every journal. To go back and look at stuff, especially a kid, like, when people, my mom saved, like, everything we did. I think that I'm very fortunate in that way too. I mean, I did get my fair share of discipline because I was a gnarly little kid, but my mom was also very, she valued what we did. And I think that speaks a lot to a kid. And she'll still, like, she won't even send us the originals because she wants to keep copies of it, but she'll Xerox notes and drawings and stuff that we did every now and then, and she'll mail them to us, like, just to give us a reminder. And so, I think that's something really fun to look back at too. Again, I don't have kids, but if the only parent advice I ever feel valid in giving a parent is save everything they do.
Yeah. My mom actually sent me a whole bunch of stuff in like a box that was greeting cards that I made when I was younger. Cause that was my foundational point where I knew that if I could create a greeting card and give it to a family member and see them smile, like I realized, hey, I really like how that makes me feel. I like how it makes them feel. Like I can create something that can make somebody smile. I want to do that. I want to do more of that.
Oh, cool.
And so I have this folder of like old greeting cards. I used to copy like Bloom County comic strip and like Garfield and like, you know, all sorts of, you know, comic strip type of characters. And that was my foundation of things. That's amazing. Looney Tunes, all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's the world I lived in. So
yeah,
it's fun to have that.
That's so rad. Yeah. I used to, I was obsessed with Disney when I was younger. And so I always tried to recreate or draw like Disney scenes. I think that was maybe another really early childhood memory. Cause my mom, I still have that, the first like little art sketchbook that I have of like Disney cartoons. And actually now that I think about it, that's what I wanted. My earliest memory of like, what do you want to be when you grow up? Well, I would say I definitely had like weird, I went through this phase where I was like, I want to be a Chinese ballerina. Like I wanted to go to, I had to live in China and I wanted to be a ballerina. And I was just so obsessed with their culture. We had friends that were like missionaries from China. And so they would always bring back just stuff, you know, the hats and the dresses and so I was obsessed with Chinese culture when I was younger, but I was also like, really, I was like, I wanted to dance so bad, but I was not a good dancer. And so that didn't last very long. And so then other than that was like, you know, young age. And then I remember I really wanted to be a Disney animator. And I kind of forgot about that dream a little bit. Or I think maybe I got too into the, I was really good at replicating art. So like, you know, the cartoons naturally, they're already drawn. And so I could draw what I saw. But what I was so fascinated with the animators was that they would go and see animals in the zoo or whatever as their inspiration and then draw the characters. And I remember thinking, well, I could never do that. How that was kind of a aha moment for me where it was like, how do you actually look at something real life and make it your own thing, you know, create. Yeah. And I remember, and that is like, that's its own gift in art. And I'm still fascinated, you know, people that would do characters, you know, on the street or, you know, your picture drawn, whatever. I just think it's so cool. And, but I remember thinking I would never be good enough to actually be an animator because I could never make it my own or know how to. And I think that's all artists, I think, go through that. Maybe it's not even something we officially like overcome totally, right? Because I feel like it's just part of the creative process to be like, this is going great. And then you get to a point where you're like, this sucks. And then why do I do this? And then
the messy middle.
Yeah. And then exactly. And then somewhere, you know, towards the end, you're like, okay, yeah, I'm an artist. But it's this ugly process. But I think, there, even when you start, or maybe before you take on whatever, there is this battle of like, I think I didn't do art for so long, or at least professionally, or try to, or whatever, because it was sort of like, well, I'll never be good enough. I'll never be, you know, what they're doing or who those people are. So it was sort of like, what's the point? Kind of. I mean, I had to learn that later in life. But the point is that I love it. So that's why I do it. Like, whether or not I get the same result as XYZ, the goal isn't even to be like that person. It's just to do it, you know, because I love it. But I didn't get that until way later in life. But I very vividly remember trying to replicate cartoons and that being kind of like, it was like a mix of like, oh my gosh, I love this. This is what I want to do. And then when I realized that I was just replicating somebody else's work and I would never be able to do it myself, I was like, I'll never be able to be an artist.
Yeah. I relate to that in a couple of ways. One, in that whole idea of somebody using their imagination to create something in their mind and then create it visually.
Yeah.
By drawing or painting. I was like, I don't know that I have that gene or whatever that is. I'm like, I can look at things and copy. I can look at things and observe. I need to look at something. I need source material.
Yeah.
And earlier on, that was one of my sticking points, as well as somewhere along the way, I had convinced myself that because I couldn't do photorealism as a style, I wasn't a legitimate artist.
Hmm.
And so I went to graphic design because I was like, well, I'm good with colors. I can do design, composition, typography. Great. And then it wasn't until many, many years later, and after going through depression, that I actually came back to my art after like a 10-year lapse of doing absolutely no art at all.
Yeah.
And then going back, like you said, I need this because I need to, because my soul needs it, because not for somebody's project, not for a client, not for the marketplace, but just because it makes me feel alive to do this.
Really?
That's where I want to start again. And that was 8 years ago. And I've done a drawing or painting every single day since. And that journey has taken me on a wild ride now.
Yeah.
So yeah, I totally get that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's like crucial that every artist go through it. Well, I think most do kind of by default. I mean, if you're, it's just in you, you know, but you know, sometimes others do more intentionally, but I would say it's true with any art form. I think you have to get to the point where you're okay doing it because you love it, and it doesn't matter. The outcomes or the results don't matter. It doesn't mean like, you know, don't try or don't work towards, you know, a goal or whatever, if you want to do it in a sort of like professional, so to speak. I use that word very loosely because people are like, oh, professional, do you get paid? But whatever. And it's like, I hate that term, but I think to be a professional artist, you don't have to be, you know, Van Gogh didn't sell a painting until after he was dead. You know what I mean? So, and then we deem him the professional artist. So it's like, you don't have to be termed a professional to be a professional. You don't have to sell a painting to be considered an artist. You don't have to have published a book to be a writer. Like, I was a writer way before I published a book. It was probably because I had just written.
Mm-hmm.
But it took me so long to own, to even say those words, I'm a writer. It's the same with artist. I am an artist. To own it and to claim it, you know, there's a bit of like, I think in the beginning, a bit of imposter syndrome.
Yep.
Because it was like, well, that's what everybody else does. And I'm not, I felt like I had to produce a certain amount or get to a certain point or sell, you know, a certain amount of XYZ to actually say like, I'm an artist. It's same with comedy. I mean, it's I think any creative spectrum, you know, whether you music, whatever it is, the first step for me, and I think for a lot of people, it just has to be, it doesn't matter where you're at in the process. You just own it, because it's not really until you own it that it itself actually starts to take off. A lot of people want to, like, you know, get to a certain point until they can claim, you know, whatever. And they struggle to get to this point where they feel confident saying, I'm an artist. Well, the funny thing is, if you just claim it and own it, the confidence follows and it comes, you know, like into the work. And so a huge thing for me was just being able to say, I am an artist. Because I would say for a long time, oh, I do art. Or, oh, I paint. Yeah, I paint. Even if people would say, oh, I hear you're an artist, I'd be like, well, I mean, you know, like, I paint. You know, I was maybe afraid of like building expectation or what if they saw my paintings and they're like, this sucks. But I realized even if someone didn't like my art, it doesn't mean I'm not an artist. It just means we have different tastes.
Right.
You know, and I think I struggled so much with the opinions of other people that I think that's why I hesitated for so long. Even the first art show I ever had, oh my gosh, I thought I was going to vomit because it felt like people reading my journal, like to put the art that I'd been working on in my room, you know, up on a wall for people to look at and judge. I couldn't even stand around. Like, I had to walk. People kept saying, you have to go. People want to talk to you. You have to go stand over there. And I was like, I don't want to hear what they say. Like, it was so vulnerable. And so I think even leading up to that, it was so hard for me to just say, like, I am an artist, but that was a huge game changer for me because it actually changed my attitude. It changed my work ethic. And all the other stuff followed, but it took it, you know, I had to get to that point where I just like claimed it. And even with comedy, I still have to like, I said forever, I think forever, I would just be like, I do comedy. I do, yeah, every now and then. I would say storyteller for a really long time. I wouldn't even say comedian. I'd say I'm the storyteller because it felt safe. Because if I said storyteller and then people happened to laugh, it was like this surprisingly, shockingly, oh my God, you're so funny. But if you say comedian, people automatically expect you to make them laugh. Mm-hmm. Usually the first response is, tell me a joke. Right. You know, or even if you get on stage, oh, she's a comedian, they're expecting a certain reaction, a certain response. And if you don't do that, then they're disappointed. And so I kind of had to get over the playing it safe, you know, of whether it was writing or comedy or art or whatever, just saying, oh, I do these things or oh, I dabble and just like own it. And whether or not people liked it, like we have different tastes, or whether or not I have room to grow, that's also fine. You know, it doesn't mean I'm good and they don't appreciate my art. It might mean I have room to grow, but it still doesn't mean I'm not an artist. It just means I'm an artist who's still working on her craft.
Yeah.
So it's a journey it's exhausting.
Absolutely. You know, with comedy, did you have friends who were like, hey, you're funny, you know, say something funny, do something funny. Right.
Oh my gosh. It's still people like, that's like the number one thing I would say to people. If you ever meet a comedian out in the world, whether they're a big name comedian or whether they're your local guy that, you know, hits up the clubs, the last thing you should say to them is, tell me a joke. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you're a comedian, tell me a joke. Or say something funny. It's the worst. It's like, my response is usually, oh, I'm off the clock.
Yeah.
And I'm very different on, I shouldn't say I'm very different, but like,
well, it's a persona, right?
Yeah. I'm more introverted. You know, especially as an artist, I'm used to doing my craft, my art at home in my room. It's very personal. Right. And so I got into comedy later in life. So it was very different for me to be because even though you're prepared, you're taking your material on stage, you're still working out your craft in front of people. Yeah. Right. So they're watching you do the creative process, which is very different than just presenting what you've done, you know, all alone. Well, I'm still introverted, even though I do a very extroverted thing on stage. It's controlled. It's timed. I'm the one that knows, you know, how long, you know, what's going to be said and when I get to leave and yada, yada, yada. I can be very extroverted and expressive on stage. I think if people saw me on stage, they wouldn't think like, oh, she must be so shy in real life. Like, if anything, people really expect me to be very gregarious. And, but I can handle a stage fine. Like, I'm not afraid of the stage at all, but put me in a room, a party, a social situation where you just have to go talk, small talk with people. And I'm like, I get so anxious. And so it's the same when I meet people, you know, out in the world, and that's less of a confidence thing and more of like, I just don't want people to do the whole, tell me a joke. And yeah. So I'm a little bit more timid sometimes about adding in the comedian part, because that's way harder for me to do it in small talk than it is to do it, you know, on a stage. And so again, that's another creative process that I kind of had to learn. It's like the same, but it's different. You know, mm-hmm. It's still a process. There's still work that goes into it. But there's such a different way in which to express it. And there's such a different expectation on the audience's part, not just in their experience of seeing you perform, but in their experience of then engaging with you afterwards, or, you know, having a conversation. And so I always say, like, one of my fears is people see me on stage or people watch my videos, and then they meet me in real life and they're like, oh, I'm kind of disappointed. Because I'm not as like, I feel like I'm not as entertaining, you know, like in my everyday life. But for whatever reason, all of that like goofiness is in there. And I love it. It is me. It's very, you know, people that watch my videos, like that is very much me. And at the same time, so is the quiet little writer who's, you know, journaling in the wee hours of the morning or just painting in her corner or there, you know, I think it's true with all people, right? We tend to just have this one expectation of who we think they should be. And if we see any other side of them, they're like, oh, well, that's not who they are. Well, it is. We're just multifaceted, you know? And so letting people be that sometimes is also a challenge.
It's interesting because, you know, for comedy, it's a very public thing. You're in front of people. With art making, a lot of times you're in a place by yourself in solitude. And yeah. A lot of artists just put their art out there and they never really put their face or their yes. life out there. And so it's easier for them to either hide behind that or just have a little more distance and not have those expectations of like, oh, you make this kind of art. I kind of thought you'd be this kind of person, or right. you don't seem like you're what I would think, because most people might not know what to think other right. than, oh, you use a lot of color. Oh, you have this subject matter or whatever. Right. Whereas comedy, it's you, like yeah. you're on stage. It's your face. It's your, you know what I mean? And yeah. people, I think, have a tendency to think, oh, well, I know them because I've seen this slice of their life. You know, right. I would imagine it's the same thing for like a lot of actors, you know, and fame and celebrity, where somebody thinks that they know them because, oh, you're on my favorite show. And I watch yeah. that every week. And I've seen like interviews and things and whatever. So I feel like I know you. Well, yeah. I mean, you know, a slice of what that person is, but you don't know that person. You know, and so when you come with all these expectations of like, oh, this is who you're going to be and this is how you're going to interact or whatever else, you know, that's when you hear those horror stories of like, well, I met my, you know, the celebrity, my favorite celebrity, and like, I shouldn't have met them because they were a total jerk, you know,
right?
Like, maybe they were just having a bad day, maybe. You know, like yeah. they're a person, they're you know,
they're so human. And yeah, yeah. And that's such a good example. I've thought of that because I've thought about that. Like, I've probably since doing comedy, I guess, because I've thought about what it's like for people who are constantly in the limelight. Like, I'm not by any means, but I've thought about what it's like for them, for people to have such an expectation of them, because I've been guilty of that. Like, oh, well, I heard he's a jerk in real life, or I heard, but being in certain situations, again, I'm not, you know, at that level by any means, but on the minor level that I've been and what people have expected me, or like how I've been treated on a stage, a TV, on a set or whatever before, or we're so human, right? And so like, I think for people who are in the limelight to constantly have these pressures on them, especially if they are known for a certain character or a certain, poor Ellen is the be kind lady. I mean, she's not allowed to even like get frustrated, you know, yeah. or it's like, ah, oh, see, I knew she was an angry bee, da 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 da. It's like, And I believe that's, I think she absolutely is, you know, her desire is that people be treated well, is that people be loved, is that we're all kind to each other. Now, is she capable of treating everybody like that and giving everybody special treatment? No, like right. she's not. And I say the same, even like in my stuff, like I'm always like, people need to, you know, deal with their stuff, or people need to have someone that they can talk to, or people need, I kind of the same thing. Like, we need to be kind to each other. We need to love each other. People need to be willing to, I fully believe that. Now, does that mean that I can be everybody's person that they dump all of their issues on and, oh, I want to talk about this, or you did? I can't. I tried for a long time. I used to try to kind of, especially because I share my story a lot and a lot of the things that I do. And I do want to help where I can. Don't get me wrong. Like, I have a heart for, especially if people have gone through some of the same struggles, but I'm not capable of being everybody's therapist or a counselor, or, you know, responding in a way. Does that mean I don't think that people shouldn't get the help they need or talk to somebody about it? Absolutely not. I think people should. Me saying it doesn't mean come to me about it.
Right.
You know, but often if you are putting your face out there and if your message is attached to it, that's how people translate it. Yeah. Now, I'm not saying that and saying like, don't reach out to me, people. I do love it. Yeah. If it means the world to me, if people let me know something I said related to them, or even if they share a story. But I will say sometimes I get overwhelmed because I'm like, I joke with Josh, like, gosh, I'm not even like that big of a deal. But I feel like the messages I do get, I can't keep up with them, you know, mm-hmm. but it's because in there is the desire to want to help, but I'm me just feeling so human. I feel limited in what I'm able to do sometimes. And emotionally, I just feel emotionally limited because I'm already kind of like, I'm still figuring things out up here that the least I can do is say like with people is who are going through a hard time is affirming it and saying, I'm sorry, that sucks. I mean, sometimes that is all people need. Sometimes I say that to my husband, because I'll be going through something and he's like trying to help. And I'm like, I don't need you to fix it. I just need you to say, I'm sorry, that sucks.
It's a guy thing. Yeah.
Need to fix it. Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Totally. And so anyways, all that to say, I think it just going back to like the multifaceted thing, right? We all have these sides and with, especially with celebrities, they have these characters that we see or who they say they are on stage or whatever. And I think that very much can be them, but also I think they're allowed to just be the regular Joe that wants to go in and get a cup of coffee and, you know, go back out and maybe not be bothered again. Sure. That's the life they chose, whatever. That's not a debate I care to get into, but at the end of the day, I would say people are people.
Yep.
And we all have bad days. Like no matter how famous you are or how nice you are, or I definitely try to like put out positive material. I think there's enough negative stuff out there. So I could see how someone might even watch my stuff and be like, oh my God, is she ever sad? But like, yes, all the time. In fact, that's why my stuff is positive. Half the time I'm talking to myself, yeah. You know, I'm not even necessarily trying to get other people to, it's not an ignore the bad. It's actually like, hey, because I've faced it, we need some more positive out there, you know? And so I think there's just a mix of it, you know, there's a mix of let's put the good out there. It doesn't mean there's not bad. I have my safe people, I guess I would say that I talk to about my stuff, but yeah, if someone were to, I think that's a fear that I have sometimes is if someone were to meet me off stage or on an off day, they'd be like, oh yeah, she was a total jerk. Day it happens.
Yeah, totally. Oh, I was having stomach problems. Come on, yeah. Everybody. You know,
especially for artists, I think we're so, not all of them, but and I think art can, it's such a broad word. I think some people hear the word artist and they think it just means, oh, I can't draw, like I don't have artistic bone in my body. No, I don't think that's true. Like there's so much stuff out there that's art that maybe, you know, the fact that we're talking on computers right now, like that's somebody's art, you know, the whole design from the internet to the computer itself, to the like all these people are, you know, artists, engineers, whatever. I think so many people have so many artistic bones in their bodies. Teaching, that's an art. I couldn't do it, you know, like whatever kind of teach you are, whether you teach kindergartners or whether you teach high school, that's a form of art, you know, math. I couldn't do math to save my life. I'd hesitate to even call it an art, but I will say I was so bad at math in high school. I failed twice. I had A's almost in every other class. So it's not that I was a bad student. I just, my brain doesn't work that way. And when thankfully I was in a school system and I had a teacher that recognized, it's not that she's not trying. There's just, there's a disconnect here with the math thing. And she actually fought for me to have math class my senior year. I almost like wasn't going to graduate because of math. And she formed basically a math class that was just for me that combined two of the math that I failed. And for my final exam, it was an art project using numbers and like a kind of like a color by numbers. And it ended up, it was like creating this like really colorful graph, but I had to use these math equations to do it. And it was beautiful. I can't recall anything what the math or the numbers were about, but she did it in a way that helped me translate the math. And so I would never ever associate math as an artist. I feel like it's like wrong to associate math and art, but you know, like if we're being respective of art, it has so many different mediums. Yeah. Math and people that do math is its own kind of art. Like it really is. And so I've learned to appreciate it in that way, but I tend to also avoid it at all costs. I'm definitely heavy on the phone calculator.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. I want to go back and revisit something with comedy. So this process of, some people have termed it writing on stage, right? Where you're going on stage, you have your material, but you need to test it out because you need an audience to know whether or not there's a connection, right? Yeah. So can you talk a little bit about like, what does that look like for you to know if something is quote successful or not? Do you do you do something once or do you do things a couple of times? Because maybe it's like, oh, the audience is just having an off night and everybody's angry because something in the news or, you know what I mean? Like there are variables sometimes, right? And so I would imagine you don't want to just like throw something away because of one experience,
right?
You know, but how do you know, how do you gauge that? What does that look like for you as far as a process?
Yeah. I think you definitely have to test stuff more than once, literally because of what you said, like, and because there's different genres and cultures and climates and people, you know, something that's going to work on the West Coast might not work in the Deep South and vice versa. You know what I mean? And so I think you have to test stuff with different audiences, and it's okay that some stuff works here and not here. So then that's just where you do this material. But I do think it's important to figure out what works everywhere. What material can you take and know? I think it was Jamie Foxx who said, I used to take my material. He said, I would take my material and do it in front of Black audiences. And I would take my material and do it in front of white audiences. And I would take what worked with both audiences, right? So some maybe killed more over here, some maybe killed more over here. But he would figure out what translated to both audiences, would glean from that and would craft an act that worked for everybody, that he could take to no matter what color the audience was, he could take that material and know that it worked. And I always thought that was, I was like, what? That's so like eye-opening. And not just like racially, but like climate, what, like where we live and what the culture is like or the climate is like. And it is true, like the world, we're full of so many different types of people, right? So it's like, I think it is beautiful that there's gonna be material that works for this culture and not this culture. That's a beautiful thing that each culture has, you know, about themselves. But I also think it's beautiful when something translates across cultures or across climates, across races, and it's something that everybody can appreciate too. Having that material that's gold, that's kind of everybody, is huge. And the only way you can do that is to test it many different places and seeing what works. That said, it's not easy at all, so especially the nights where you figure out what doesn't work. Like, it's really hard to tell yourself to do it somewhere because the tendency is to be like, oh, I tried it, it didn't work. Mm-hmm. Even stuff I feel like I've done that I've written, maybe when I first did it, it didn't work that well. Maybe because I've written or whatever, but it's kind of like you just know. I know there's something about this funny. I might not have figured it out yet. Comedians, all comedians like have that joke where they're like, audiences don't appreciate this as much as I feel like it deserves. Like, and so whether or not it's just going to be their personal like inside joke or it's between the comedians and they just, I keep this one's for me, or it does deserve some appreciation. They're still working on how to deliver it in a way that it gets the reaction. It requires having to do it again and again and again. And it requires having to do it sometimes in ways. And I've kind of had to start paying attention to, you know, in what way did I tell that? Because with comedy, it's not just what you're saying. It's how you say it.
Yeah.
I think that's true in life in general. But there's different style comedy, right? So there's like one-liners, there's storytellers, there's deadpan, there's physical comedy. Like there's no one right or wrong way to do it. It's figuring out what's believable, what works for you, and what's believable to the audience about the way that you're expressing yourself. I mean, some of my favorite comedians are more deadpan, but I'm not deadpan at all. So if I were to think I had to be like that in order to be a successful comedian, well, then I would never do it. Or I would never, you know, this is the same kind of like what we were talking about earlier with owning it. I had to own, I'm more of a storyteller comic. Like I just, maybe my own insecurities, I assumed because I wasn't this one-liner joke teller, I was like, I'm not a real comedian. But watching people like Jim Gaffigan and Mike Birbiglia, Kevin Hart, they're storytellers. They're telling stories from their lives, but they're telling in a very funny way. They're including, you know, laughs right in the middle of the stories. And so that in and of itself requires having to tell the story and having to tell the story to see like, oh, does this work? Does it not? people always say, like, when you're first starting, go to open mics. I'm not going to say don't do that. I mean, it's true. Like, you have to get it out. I think the process of getting it out there is important. And just hearing, sometimes it's literally just about hearing yourself say it out loud. But to anyone that's starting, I would say sometimes the most devastating thing to do is go perform open mic, because everyone at an open mic is there for themselves. And they're there to get you, especially an actual comedy open mic. It's people that just want stage time. And so at the time they're not in the room because they just are waiting for their turn. Or if they are in the room, they're thinking about their set. You're not, I would say do them, but do not go there expecting to get laughs. Do not go there expecting that to be what tells you whether or not your joke is funny. I just don't think open mics are a good gauge for that. They can be, you know, but usually it's a bunch of, in my experience, a bunch of guy comics who all want to be, you know, the next Seinfeld or whoever. And they're either sitting in the back talking, you know, cause they're only worried about their, nobody's there to actually like encourage or to be like, yeah, okay, here's what would work here. Not saying it can't be that. I'm not saying there's not ones, hopefully, that are like that out there. That'd be awesome. I would say if anyone wanted to try, we were saying with music, maybe, I don't know, music, I feel like maybe is a little bit easier because it's an ambiance thing, you know, it doesn't require the full attention in order to appreciate. I love background music, right? So just because I might not be looking directly at you, not so appreciating what background. I always try to, you know, if someone's playing live somewhere or coffee shop, I always try to tell them afterwards, well, thank you, that was awesome, you know, even if it didn't look, I was 100% engaged the whole time. The atmosphere is amazing versus me. It requires full attention to get the reaction that you're expecting. Because the whole point is the punchline. So they have to pay attention to the setup. And so that's a harder room to command sometimes, because there's, especially with an open mic, because it's just, they're just hanging out, you know, wanting to get stage time. And so sometimes, you know, people that want to go and like get stage time at an open mic, it's like, yeah, for sure, do it. Just sometimes that's not the best gauge for what's funny and what's not. Not to say it won't tell you, it will tell you something, but show, for me, doing like actual shows, small shows too, like around town, doing whatever stage time you can get, but trying to get in front of like types of audiences. And kind of just sometimes I go into it and I see the audience or I see what kind of night it is, and I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna add this to the list of stories. Things I had to do when I was pursuing comedy. You just have to embrace the awkward. Sometimes I tell myself, I'm gonna let it be awkward for 8 minutes or however long. And I'm just gonna do it. I'm gonna show up. The least I can do is show up. Cause sometimes you just have those nights where it doesn't connect, or you feel off, or maybe it is the audience. I always say don't blame the audience, but I don't agree with that. I don't at all. I would say don't take it out on the audience. Like these comedians that kind of like turn on the audience and they're like, F you guys, that was funny. I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a way to lose the audience once you start like attacking them. But yeah, it's to me, it's a way harder process. The whole like writing on stage or to see what works, because you have to do it in front of people. It's not, you know, like with painting or painting your, step back and look at it. You know, like go back to it, whatever. Even with writing, even if I let someone else read it, it's just read this and, you know, let me get back to it. No, that whatever. Versus comedy, you are doing it in front of people. And because you have that name comedian of you, if that expectation is not being met, they might not know you're trying to see if some new material works or,
right,
you know, they're just like, oh, this girl sucks. That's like, all the time, like, I just maybe won't try that one for a while. But I've had jokes that I love now that maybe at first weren't the strongest, but they evolved over time. I finally kind of figured out how to do a way that gets a harder laugh, as opposed to you know, I like the chuckle's nice, but you're going for that yeah, guttural, like gut laugh, like, yeah. There's nothing like being on the receiving end of hearing that because of something that you said, and likewise being on the giving end of realizing you, because I think laughter, I really do. I think, not to sound all cheesy, but I think laughter is a gift. And mm-hmm. and for me, I feel like I've given something when I hear someone just give a real hearty laugh. Like it does just as much for me as I feel like it does for them. And sometimes in those moments, I'm like, that's why I do this. For as hard as it is, sometimes I'm like hearing people receive laughter or hearing people say, I needed that. Or I needed a good laugh or oh, did it. Cause life's tough, you know?
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
even if it's just for one moment in time and one little night, they get to step away from everything and laugh for a little bit. It's like, that to me is such a gift to get to do that. Sometimes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I want to talk real quickly too, before we wrap things up, you have a book and it's called, A Spade, correct? Talk a little bit about like why a book, is it a comedy book? Is it life experiences, kind of a blend of things? Where did the book come from?
Yeah. I used to say people that watch my videos probably think I'm the happiest person in the world. And people that read my blog probably think I'm the saddest person in the world. So it's a different, it's a different medium in which to express myself. So
tragic comic.
Yes. Yes. So it's definitely not like, it's definitely not a comedy. At the same time, there's humor because humor is how I found to tougher things in life. So the title, it's called A Spade, is just based on what became my life motto, which is just call a spade a spade. Like, let's just stop pretending that everything is fine when it isn't. Like, it's okay that things are hard. And maybe if we were more honest about what's hard, we would realize we're not the only ones dealing with some of this mm-hmm. stuff, and we're not alone. And in that we find actually help for what's hard. And so it's a collection of short stories. And there, I guess it's memoir-like because it's kind of my life experiences of how I dealt with, you know, X, Y, Z, or what it was sort of calling out the ugly truth in a situation. Maybe the, you know, I was raised in the South and just best foot forward, smile on your face, like everything's fine, honey. Maybe when I stop pretending like everything's fine and I just like it is, I realize I'm the only one. A lot of people, you know, are dealing with it. And so for me, it was a way to just, I maybe wasn't at the point yet where I could say like, hey, I'm not fine, but I would write, you know, all the time. And I started a blog, and then from the blog, because I was getting responses from people that were like, thank you for saying that. Like, I feel the same way, or, you know, I'm so glad someone else said it, you know, X, Y, Z. And selection of short stories. So you can read them. Individual have to have read through the whole book to, you know, to get each chapter. You could read an individual chapter, or if you felt like something applied to somebody else, like, oh, this, you know, one chapter, oh, depression, blah, whatever. Or it is chronological, so it is very much in the story format, kind of me going through a lot of the things. And so you can very much read it straight through as a book. And so yeah, for me it was just a creative outlet to express some really hard seasons in my life that were really hard to maybe express verbally, or maybe I didn't know. You know, I think at the time you had mentioned earlier, kind of going through years of not doing art, and same, it was kind of this period of, you know, well, I was like struggling to believe it about myself or to do it. In that time of not doing at least like painting, it was such a struggle. I didn't know there was a lot related to, you know, self-expression and creativity. But at the same time, a beautiful thing that birthed out of that was sort of developing these writings that I didn't know that I needed to get out. And so, it's kind of an artist's honest look at in general, and there's no answers by any means. Like, well, here's what you do if you're feeling bad. It's not a self look at all, but it allows for people to just talk about what might be hard to talk about. You know, and at the very least, it allows someone stuff that's hard to talk about so that they know they're not the only ones going. And, you know, I mean, it's not like, here's all my stuff. Because of the humor aspect, I have learned how to tie, you know, things that are also lighthearted. So for me, at least, it doesn't feel like too heavy or too just like, get a grip, or at least a therapist. So there's humor for sure tied in there. So that for me, that's where the hope comes from. So it's like, it might be hard and it might be heavy, but at the end of the day, there's always hope. And that's what I cling to. Even when it's hard, even when it doesn't feel like it, I cling to the belief that there's always hope. So it's very much mingled in there. So yeah, it was a huge project for me to do and to put out there. And yeah, I'm super proud of it just because it's kind of the first thing that I did and that I, you know, you go through a lot of self-doubt, I think, in any creative process. And so to actually see it in print was really cool. And I'm super proud of it. It's super fun to actually have it out there. So.
Awesome. Yeah. And where can people get a copy of this book?
Yeah. So it's on Amazon, barnesandnoble.com. And then I also have a website. It's called aspade.com. And my website, jjbarrows.com. There's like links and stuff on there. But yeah, pretty much if you look up JJ Barrows, you can kind of, I try to make it so that it's kind of linked to like social media outlet.
Yeah. Well, I want to encourage everybody to make sure they get a copy of that book, to follow JJ, tune into her YouTube videos, and you know, check out her art. I mean, there's so much creativity pouring out of you, and I love to see those different expressions. And always love having opportunities like this to talk to somebody who has that multifaceted creativity, because it's moving in and out of those expressions. And one expression may do something for you where another one can't, and vice versa. Yeah. And learning to dance with that stuff. And like you beautifully said throughout this interview, of owning it, showing up, figuring out this is who you are with your art, and then bringing that to the people around you. Because that's when everybody wins, right? When you can figure out that thing that lights you up in the way that it's supposed to, and then you bring it to other people and it lights them up, and it's like, yes, everybody's winning right now, you know?
Yeah. Thanks, Mike. This has been awesome.
Absolutely. My pleasure. And, you know, I'm going to go watch more of your videos. I love all the pop culture references too. We didn't even get a chance to get into any of that stuff, but, you know, I immediately felt like, oh, this is a person who I need to keep tabs with what you're doing, and just, you know, yeah. Just get into your orbit a little bit there, because I love what's happening. So I appreciate it.
Oh. Thanks so much, Mike.
Thanks for listening today. I'd appreciate it if you would subscribe, leave a rating and a review. It really helps this podcast be seen and heard by others.